T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
You're done. You're absolutely done for the week.
It's time to move one show into the next show. And Bernstein and McKnight with Will Perdue sitting in today now brings you into Mark Grody and Anthony Herron sitting in for the Lawrence Holmes Show. Gentlemen, hello.
Guys,
hola.
Hello.
And bienvenidos.
You guys have won the day already. I am walking over the Columbus Ujumbo Street Bridge, yeah, making my way here to the downtown studios, and I hear a story about Jerry Krause on all fours getting into a taxi cab and just the real LOL. You know, just the people coming, taking pictures of Trump Tower like people do in this city, yes, and I'm just laughing out loud of the visual of that, and then the joke of somebody saying, open the window. It's so mean, but it's so funny. Thank you, Will Perdue. Thank you, Dan Bernstein, for daring to share your stories. And then the fast caveat from Will Perdue, he's a genius, you know.
Right. I like the fact he might have been wheeled out on a luggage rack.
It's very possible that they took him out on a luggage.
I can either confirm or deny that.
I censored part of my version of the story. Before I get out of here, after we turn the mics off, I have to share the part.
Oh, thank you.
Mark, are you still going to be around?
Jerry backs out again.
You know what's hilarious is, as I heard you talking about it, and I thought maybe Dan was not going to tell the story. And at this point, I'm just a listener who's not even thinking about the fact that he works at the radio station. And I'm like, damn it, Dan, tell the stupid story. And I thought, wait a minute, I work there. I could get the story no matter what. But as a consumer at that moment, I was mad that it felt like Will was almost talking Dan out of telling the story. And then Dan was like, oh, maybe I shouldn't tell the story. And then he told the story.
No, I was trying to talk him into telling the story.
No, I did some self-editing, but there's a lot more.
Thank you. I needed that. I needed that chuckle on my way in. So that was beautiful. Loved hearing you guys talk about the golf cheating. Golf cheating is rampant as well, apparently, at least with one guy. Right,
Patrick Reed is
Patrick Reed.
Penis.
Yes, yeah.
Everybody hates him, and apparently,
what did
good
you
reason,
just say?
I said he's a penis.
Dan likes saying penis on the radio. I don't know if you know this, Will, but he says it, and he will stop shows occasionally that don't want to play along with his
penis man.
Yeah. That is what goes on. Terry Barr is on line 3.
Right. Have you heard? Speaking of cheating in golf, have you heard about the performance-enhancing use of beta blockers?
What?
Yeah, that apparently to settle nerves on the greens, on and around the greens, apparently some guys had found that certain chemicals will keep your heart rate steady.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds feasible.
Been whispers of that.
Yeah. I hadn't heard that. Huh.
Well, I always tell the story. Hey, we're back to telling stories.
Yeah. Hey, that's not what I'm here for.
And then before we leave, Anthony's got to tell one.
Okay.
I learned this from the hockey players. So when I first came to Chicago and you used to go to the old stadium, you know, you had to go down the steps. And if you took a right, you went to the Blackhawks locker room. And if you went to the left, you went to the Bulls locker room. You know, you're 50, 60 games into the season and you're like, man, just you walk in and you're kind of excited, but you're just like, I'm exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
How do I get myself going here?
Sudafed.
Bingo. Seriously.
Sudies.
It seems just counterintuitive.
Any sudies?
No, but what they would tell you was the Blackhawks, the players would tell you, okay, the first thing you do, pop 2 Sudafed.
Really? Are they a stimulant?
Well, it actually gets
ephedrine.
Yes.
Okay.
It opens up your blood vessels. Your blood pumps quicker, and then you slam two cups of coffee, and it gets the caffeine into your system quicker.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So kind of like Denzel in Flight, but the opposite, inverse of Denzel in Flight.
I'm told that in a hockey locker room, the bowl of Sudafed looked like the Cinnamon Red Hots.
Wow.
It was literally like that.
But, if people don't believe me, I mean, now you can actually test positive in amateur sports by just taking Sudafed, the real Sudafed.
Most NFL locker rooms I was ever in, you get the opportunity to just – because prescriptions are prescriptions. You have team doctors who manage those things. But with most squads, if you want Tylenol, Sudafed, you know, any kind of anti-inflammatories or whatever, they just have buckets and buckets full of these just for you to go grab by hand as many as you want. Green Bay was the only locker room I ever occupied where you actually even the Tylenol, even the ibuprofen, just all the standard over-the-counter stuff was locked up because of what happened with Brett Favre and the dependency he began to
develop. That's all it takes. One guy's got to ruin it for everybody.
Ruin all the pill popping for everybody else. Well, now you got to go ask for Tylenol or Advil or anything.
Well, I remember when I was in the NBA, there were two coolers in the locker room. There was one cooler with water and Gatorade, and there was another cooler with beer. And as soon as the game was over, you'd pop open the beer cooler, and guys would be like, want one? Want a beer? Like, wait a minute, man, you just played 42 of 48 minutes, and your post-game drink is a beer? And I tell this story all the time. But
I've seen guys smoke right after the game.
Sure.
Hey, guys smoked at halftime. After the game.
You haven't earned a cigarette
after. You play in the ABA or the NBA? We're not smoking at halftime?
But I always tell this story about, you know, one of the guys that broke me into the league was John Paxson. We used to sit right next to each other in the locker room. And another guy that came in and kind of passed through, played at Kansas State, played at the old Kansas City Kings, was Eddie Neely towards the end of his career.
Ed Neely. You get to call him Eddie.
Yep. And
set a screen, boy.
After a game one time, we're in the game. We're sitting, and I forgot where this was. And this is NBA players making good money. I looked at Pax and Neels, and I'm like, hey, where are we going? He goes, nowhere. I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes, you see this right here? This is called free beer. Free. And when we finish all this beer, then we'll go get something to eat. I was like,
first great lesson passed down to you.
I'm like, yeah, okay. He goes, and if we don't finish it, we're going to stuff it all in our bags and take it back to the room with us. Because it's free.
Sure.
This was a mustached John Paxson at that point.
Didn't
he have the thick stash earlier in his career?
Not thick enough.
No. Is it
Jim Paxson? Am I thinking of his brother?
Did Pax have the porn stash in San Antonio or Chicago?
I know he had like the half-grown instant. I know Jim's was better.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah, okay, I'm thinking of Jim Paxson. All right.
Because Pax came, it was Kyle Macy that was here first, right? And then was that a trade? I want to say that.
But Pax came here from San Antonio.
Yeah,
I can't remember if it was a trade.
I thought they
or
traded Kyle Macy.
And it might have been.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just,
so who else is in that locker room? The one with Ed Neely in it. I'm trying to picture, because that was sort of the transitional time.
Right.
You know, Michael's there.
Right. So it was.
So what year?
Still had hair.
Yeah. Michael.
Fitting, but it was there.
Forrest, Scotty, Bill Cartwright. I think Scott Williams had moved on. Eddie was here in two different junctions.
Right, that was the
so
second.
That's what I was trying. I think that was the second, but it was Pax and I can't remember. Craig Hodges, I think, was still here. You know, so the core was what stayed the same. But we talked about Jerry, the ability to put in those surrounding pieces that fit in were pretty amazing.
Could Craig have fit in you know, today's NBA where the deep three ball is so prevalent, but the rest of Craig's game beyond back then is just okay to be a spot up shooter, but the other skills, could he have fit in the modern NBA?
Oh, absolutely. He was a much better ball handler than people gave him credit for. But as I pointed out, with Phil had players within the system that he wanted to do specific things.
Mm.
And what was the thing he wanted Craig to be? Off the ball, moving without the ball, so that when the defense comes to help, he's open for the open three. But it also, because of the fact he could shoot the three and the deep three, that the defense was very hesitant to help, which would help open up the lane when you would use Bill or myself or one of the bigs and pull him out of the lane to set the screen roll or even back then, the illegal defense rules were different as well.
Yeah, right.
You know, Craig was great because when before the Birdo Center opened, the Bulls worked out of the multiplex over at the border of Deerfield and Northbrook. And we would play pickup games there. That just, you know, we lived there, we'd go play pickup games. And sometimes after practice, the Bulls would come out and hang out. And Hodges, every once in a while, would grab four other guys. He grabbed, like, you know, just these four little Jewish kids. He'd be like, all right, let's go get him.
Oh, the awesome. Blackest Billy Hoyle you've ever seen.
And they were like, okay, pass it to him. And he would shoot every time, and we'd win and get next. And then he'd, you know, he'd walk off and let somebody else come replace him.
As you know, because you were at the multiplex, mm-hmm. we practiced on a court that wasn't even regulation size.
Right.
Because there was a space limit. Basically, what the Bulls did was tacked on that gym to the end of the multiplex and made an agreement that, hey, we can practice there. So literally when we were joking around and shooting half-court shots, that really wasn't a half-court shot.
And one time Stacy...
was it about 10 feet short?
I think so. It was like 8 or 10 or something like that. But yes. Stacy one time came out and did like an impromptu clinic. He's like, all right, who wants to know how the triple post offense works? And we're standing around. And he was actually a really good teacher.
Yeah.
No, he could see that.
And he was
showing it.
He's like, you stand here, just a couple of friends and me. And
that's where I got it mixed up. Stacy actually is the one that coached in Rockford.
Stacy coached Rockford, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did. But Stacy at the time, you know, we were high school kids, and he would say, okay, now when this pass goes in here, if you're in the corner, now you cut hard. Now you come around here. This is a continuity action. He showed how to run the pinch post. Like, I might give it to you, I might not. But you got to tell me. It's sort of like an RPO almost kind of thing. But it was really funny. He would just he was
so basically you just told the Stacy story. I mean, Stacy was do as I say, not as I do. Because when I touch the ball, I'm shooting it.
You are listening to WSCR and HD Chicago, WBMX and HD2 Chicago, Sports Radio 670, the score, radio.com sports station.
That was the advice that Bill Walton gave when Bill
Stacy tells you now, he says, the only guy that could guard me was Phil Jackson.
Oh, stop it. Please. Like, Bill Walton came by one of our CBA practices. And everyone's like, oh, my God, that's Bill Walton. That's Bill Walton. And our coach is standing there. And Walton says, I need to give everybody here one critical piece of advice. If you're listening and you are in this league, every time you touch the ball, shoot it. And our coach is like, what are you telling that for? I'm trying to run an offense here. I got to pass the ball. Every time. The only way you're going to get out of this league is by scoring. Shoot it every time you touch it. Your individual stats are more important than how good your team is. Fuming. It was great.
Be careful what you ask for. Hey, Bill, come talk to our guy. Yeah, right,
by the way, Dan Bernstein, has it been brought to your attention, I'm guessing it has been, that your Mike Krzyzewski could double as a Mike Bloomberg? Has that come up at all?
Too much of it. It's a Chicago, New York thing. The vocal intonation is somewhat similar, but the accent is not.
I gotcha. Right. A little bit too New Yorky.
Yeah, it could be worked into it maybe a little bit. There's a similarity to the speech pattern, I think, too.
Okay.
But there's some definitive. Like,
so regardless of who he's imitating, they all sound the same. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah,
that's the way to make it work.
You know,
gotta fool them.
Absolutely, guys. We got a packed show today. We are going to talk to Fran Charles from MLB Network. We now have Solomon Wilcox to come on the show to talk about the National Football League, the former safety and current broadcaster. We will talk to him. We will also hear a very honest 2 minutes from Bears running back David Montgomery.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, go. Ask five.
Please.
Would you even consider a 17th game as a former player?
It's a valid question. It would have to be for the right term. Yes is the simple answer, but it would have to be for the right term. There would have to be a trade-off in the amount of time I'm spending doing other things that my body's getting beat up in other ways. But yes, if it feels like the trade-off is there, I would consider it.
Three preseason games.
That alone is not enough.
Okay.
There, and actually, I've got some details we can get into.
But doesn't that affect the product?
Well, the main guys who are going to be the legitimate contributors during the regular season are only going to get so much preseason action anyway. So to cut off one of the preseason games means those three, as opposed to the four that it is now, will be more condensed to actual players, actual guys in the two deep getting action in those games. So if it's not handled correctly, it can have a negative effect on the product, but the overall handling of the preseason, because like Bears coach Matt Nagy is so apprehensive to put his legitimate guys out there in the preseason, then teams have started slower in recent years than they have in years past.
But that's my biggest question. How does that affect the product? Because even in the NBA, they've shortened preseason. They play fewer games. We used to always play eight. Now they play, I think, five, and you don't practice as much, and it's just the product at the beginning of the year is not that good. Will the same thing happen to the NFL?
There's not another sport out there that practice is, especially in modern times, so dissimilar from a game than football. You get better at playing football by playing football, but unfortunately it shortens your lifespan as well while that's going on, so it's a tough thing. But with the way that the practice time during the regular season will be shorter now, like I mentioned, I got, you know, some emails from veterans, you know, committees and all that I can get into, but everything will be more condensed with the way that the toll on the players' bodies are going to be taken on them. So one more game during the regular season, one more game during the playoffs. If the other elements feel right, then sure. But the thing that Gene Washington, the former head of the NFL Players Association, kind of got a bum rap back in the day because it was seen that he and Paul Tagliabue were a little too tight, had too much of a relationship. Same thing when Roger Goodell took over. But he did a really good job of being at the forefront of the revenue split with the Players Association and the league. Like when I was in the league in the early 2000s.
Was it 53-47 now?
It was. Well, right now the players get in the mid to upper 40s. This new CBA will grant the players and get them up to about 48%. When I was in the league, it was over 50% that the players got of the revenue share. So all those checks that would go out. Now, the revenue of the league has grown exponentially over the last 20 years as well. So that's part of why the owners were looking to get that, you know, sort of, you know, that sliding scale tip back in their direction. So the players are still getting more money overall, but the percentage they're getting of it is lower now under the current regime than it was even back when I was.
And I know we got to go, but let's just point this out. Hmm. There's only one guy in here that had his breakfast delivered to the studio.
Yeah, it's going to be king, right?
Thank you to Herb Lawrence for the caffeinated beverage that he was able to deliver.
And
you
talk about those eight exhibition games. Not only did the NBA, back in the day, the NBA played their exhibition games on like a barnstorming schedule. Like they would play them in Cedar Rapids and go down to Chapel Hill.
They would play in cities without NBA teams to try to grow the brand.
They played in, when I worked, my first radio job was in Peoria in 95, 94. And the Bulls played there, and it was a big damn deal. Everybody in Peoria was
sold out.
Oh, yeah.
Remember one year we played in Champaign, and we didn't fly. We bussed, and halfway there we stopped at some restaurant to have our pregame meal and then got back on the bus and then went down to Champaign and played and then brought the bus back.
Should have been at Denny's. Make sure Tex could get his.
Well, Tex didn't care because the food was free, paid by the team.
You guys had to have, maybe not you, you guys must have hated going to those venues. The small central Illinois, get on a bus.
When you're first in the league, you didn't, because that was pretty cool.
Was it? Okay.
Those were diehard fans. You knew that this was going to be their only chance to see you play.
They're going out of their way.
I mean, it actually made things easy. I don't want to say easier, but that sixth, seventh, and eighth preseason game, we're like, all right, enough of this. Let's get ready to play. But when you went to these smaller venues and it was sold out and these people were just dying to meet you, they just wanted a high five. You learned that this was their only time they were going to be able to see you play.
Good. I'm glad you guys appreciated that.
Cedar Rapids, Peoria.
It was like the Beatles when they came to Chapel Hill. The Dean Dome had just opened. They used to play in Carmichael Gymnasium.
Lincoln, Nebraska.
And they opened the Dean Dome because, you know, Michael Jordan in North Carolina. And it was wild. And he played, and the crowd was going crazy there. And then what was the guy's name? Was it Matt Brust? Who was in camp. It was just like a football player. And he dove into the scorer's table, like broke the scorer's table and knocked three fans onto the ground. And I'm like, dude, it's an exhibition game, man.
Apparently Bulls versus Sonics in Iowa City at Carver Hawkeye Arena in like the mid-90s at some point from the 412 on the Texas.
Sounds right. Yeah, stuff like that. I mean, those things were fun because even though it was a preseason game, man, these fans were going nuts.
Yeah.
You know, they
rock stars.
They
man.
Just weren't sitting on their hands, being like, you know, we'll wait for the second.
Folks got to see BJ return to Carver. That's pretty
cool. Right.
Yeah,
good
there
for
you
all
go.
The Iowa fans there. But
and that was the other thing they used to do was even the teams would try to, like, we got to play in Nashville one year at Vanderbilt Stadium against. I remember Utah Jazz and Iowa because mm-hmm. of BJ. You know, just when they would bring in their first round guys, they would try to play games back in their cities because mm-hmm. they knew they would sell out as well.
Before Will Perdue leaves, since we're on this topic, because football becoming more and more global, I think the expansion to 17 games, part of the thought there is that at some point maybe the NFL gets a division over in London, and we were just talking a bit about London before we came in here. And for you guys in kind of the 80s and transitioning into the 90s as the NBA was becoming more global, were you guys aware of – because I don't think football guys, I don't think we're completely committed to the thought that globalization of football is legit yet, because really still no other country plays football at a high level aside, well, the United States and Canada. No other continent plays it at a high level. Basketball, it's easier for everyone else to pick it up as they have. Did you guys recognize that that was on the way in like the 80s and 90s?
No. I mean, it was, because here's the interesting thing. We looked at European players, Asian players, they were foreigners.
Mm-hmm. Taking our jobs.
Taking our jobs. We don't need them in the league.
Like when Šarūnas Marčiulionis showed up. And
right. You're like, hey, hold on a minute, man. Come on now. You know, this is the NBA. This isn't the World Basketball League.
But everyone knew Jerry had the love affair with Kukoc before right. he ever came here.
But we, at the time, you were so concerned about your job and others' jobs, you didn't look at the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't think, holy cow, if this game becomes global, just think about as you're talking about, the salary cap's going to rise, and mm-hmm. there's going to be more money invested. And I mean, you Adam Silver's talking about how many hundreds of millions of dollars we're going to lose from China, and you're
the
like,
salary cap's going to go down.
China, like whoa. But it's in a story that people recognizing and people not recognizing. I always talk about a friend of mine played on the PGA Tour. He was a grinder. And I specifically remember this. We're at in Milwaukee. I think it was Deer Run, used to be the public course up there where they played the PGA event. And we're having lunch. And while we're having lunch, and his name is Scott Gump, and he's now the assistant golf coach at Notre Dame, the Nike rep came up to him and said, hey, man, I hate to do this, but here you go. Your contract with us is no longer valid. I'm pissed.
Have a good lunch.
Well, he knew it was coming, but that made it official. And I'm like, dude, aren't you mad? Aren't you pissed? He goes, nope. I'm like, why not? I mean, you're a grinder, man. You depend on this. You provide shoes and clothes for your wife and shoes and clothes for your daughter with this Nike contract. And they provide your golf shoes and your shirts and your shirt. I mean, now you got to go out and buy that stuff. And he goes, and you know why this all happened? Tiger Woods.
Ah, yes.
They had to bring in all their contracts because they were signing this guy. And he looked at me and he goes, it's now up to me. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes, the purses because of Tiger Woods are going to skyrocket. And if I play better, that measly 20 grand that I make from my Nike contract will be nothing. Now, he to this day says, I didn't realize it would skyrocket like it did, but just because of one guy.
Mm-hmm.
And the impact that one guy had on the game of golf, the purses like just exploded. And that's kind of what you're talking about right. if you can somehow get the current players to wrap their arms around the fact of globalization and the one extra game, how that puts so much more money into the pie.
Not even just the NBA part of it. Like, you're talking about legit jobs in other countries.
Yeah.
That you can go make a living. You can spend a career playing in the top league in Italy. You can make money in Turkey, in Greece, in Israel, in China. Like you can go make a life for yourself.
But the biggest thing is, like Anthony's talking about, there's no other game, professional game out there that affects the human body the way football does.
Guys, yep. Thanks for the extra time. Will Perdue, always a pleasure to
always,
see you.
Man.
Dan Bernstein.
Is this like overtime? Weekend. Do I get paid extra for this?
Yeah,
Mitch,
I don't
ask.
Know.
Mitch.
Yeah, give it a try.
Mitch is actually here. Mitch is doing his big market job today. So he's here. You can go talk to him. Yeah.
You can reach into his wallet and give me a five. Okay.
Good weekend, guys. See ya.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.